There's nothing to be afraid of. It's reaching out to you because it wants you. It's calling you. So don't turn away from it this time. I want you to find it. Understand?
Yes.
Nancy manages to follow Jonathan's voice back through the portal from the upside-down dimension, narrowly avoiding the Demogorgon. They are shaken by their experience, but ultimately decide to hunt the monster down once and for all. Unfortunately, Jonathan allows Steve to provoke him into a fight and gets arrested by the police instead.
Hopper and Joyce follow clues leading to Terry Ives, a former lab subject of Dr. Brenner. There they learn that Terry miscarried a child she claimed had special powers 12 years ago. Joyce and Hopper fear this is all part of a cover-up Will got mixed up in.
Dustin tries to broker peace between Mike and Lucas, but Lucas isn't having it, preferring to mount a one-man mission to rescue Will from the dimensional gate. Dustin and Mike search for Eleven before being ambushed by bullies. Eleven saves them, but confesses that she is the one who opened the portal as she relives painful flashbacks to her experiences with Dr. Brenner in Hawkins' lab. Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And that is a really hard title to say. Every time I feel like I barely scrape by saying that title. I feel like Dustin trying to say asshole.
Yeah, saying asshole with your front without your front teeth, pretty rough. Pretty rough. Yeah,
especially in the plural.
Yeah, assholes. Yeah, I can't even. Yeah, he's doing a better job than I do.
Yeah, it's super awesome though. That scene with Dustin trying to get the gang back together.
Dustin's the best.
Really good. Yeah.
He's wise beyond his years.
He is, yeah. It's almost like adults are writing for him. But, you know, you forgive
but
a lot
in the
of that,
best,
right?
In the best way.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. They're like this is the way real kids would talk if they all were written for by Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith.
I think the thing I like so much about Dustin is his buy-in on these D&D campaigns. Like, he's the guy who remembers every single step of their journey.
He's the lore keeper.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like Mike, you know, for everything that Mike is trying to do here and now to save Will, he's also kind of prepared the group for this in a way by being such an awesome DM, because it's obviously engaged Dustin in a way that, like, he's able to instantly recall all of these things that they went through, these trials and tribulations that, and how they turned out and, you know, why they worked the way they did. And like half of finding Will here, I feel, is going to be due to their D&D campaigns and just how well Mike did as a DM.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of these episodes I kind of sit back and I'm amazed that it's still working as well as it does, because you've got these kids following tortured kid logic about D&D, and it happens to be right. And then you see Nancy and Jonathan do something similar where they're using stuff out of National Geographic to deduce skills and abilities that Demogorgon might have, which are largely proven to be correct. And then Joyce and Hopper, like in a very Bloodhound Gangs way, just lead from clue A to clue B to clue C to clue D and have all the things confirmed. And it's like kind of hackneyed, but it still really works.
Yeah, I do think there's some complexity in there, right? This idea that Hopper finally realizes, oh, I've been chasing the wrong kid this whole time.
Yeah.
That was set up episodes ago.
Right, we
knew it as an audience, but he needed to figure it out.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm with you. It's like it feels like it's written as opposed to just happening naturally in most ways. But I think there's just enough in there to say, hey, this is, yes, we know this is like a scripted show, but they're kind of feeling it out as they go in their own ways.
And also as things get a little bit too convenient, they also hide it with like, oh, well, you know, a awesome set piece where Eleven levitates Mike and you know, breaks his kid's arm and has this kind of moment of badass. And also there's the, you know, some of our clearest looks at the Demogorgon yet and the backstory between Eleven opening up the portal. So, you know, a little razzle dazzle to kind of distract you from some of the mechanics of the plot unfolding. Because again, I would normally say, oh, you can really hear the writers typing in the background, but you can't. You can't hear it over the sound of how awesome the episode is.
Right. And that sweet synth track.
Yeah.
That swells every time something awesome happens.
The only thing I don't like about this episode, and it's not even that I don't like it because I'm not supposed to like it, is like Steve and his fucking group's reaction to, you know, Nancy having Jonathan overnight. Like, and the sheer frustration of, you see these kids with all this crazy, slightly grown up Goonies monster hunting gear. Mm-hmm. And like, hot damn, this is going to be entertaining. And then the cops come and arrest Jonathan because he punched Steve.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
I feel like it needed to be that way because where are they going? What are they going to do? Are they going to stake out that tree?
I don't know, but I was wanting to see it. I was wanting to see the bear traps. I was wanting to see like some kind of homemade flamethrower.
It would have been pretty awesome, but I wonder how effective it would have been.
Yeah.
Like, I'm questioning, what can the Demogorgon do in his dimension, in the Upside Down? Can he open portals wherever he chooses?
He can't hunt down an 11-year-old boy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we find out a little bit more about the Demogorgon in this episode. He is blind, I suppose.
And deaf, because he...
As we understand
like,
it,
like
yeah.
It's, they point him out to be, like, essentially blind and deaf, but they have a very acute sense of smell. But that's stuff that Nancy's speculating on, because when she said Barb was bleeding and that deer was bleeding, maybe they're like sharks that can smell one part's blood per 50 million centiliters of air or whatever. I'm like, huh, I wonder if in the first episode, if like Will got freaked out by the sound of the Demogorgon and wrecked his bike and got his like knee scraped up or something, and the Demogorgon smelled that. And I went through and I rewatched those first 10 minutes of the episode, and it turns out that doesn't seem to be what happened. Will came across the Demogorgon standing in the middle of the road. He wrecked. Mm-hmm. Didn't look like he really, like, he fell in the soft, wet leaves. Didn't feel like he really skinned himself up. There's no obvious bleeding, and then the Demogorgon was on him.
Yeah.
From the second he like saw/heard him, so you know, but that there's nothing saying that Nancy's right. That's the thing. Like, these kids can't literally be right about their D&D campaign mapping 1-to-1 onto the Demogorgon. Nancy and Jonathan probably aren't correct. What is going to be like? How are they actually going to defeat them? I mean, they got all the stuff. They got Elle, who's got her psychic weaponry. They've got a gun with Jonathan. It sounds like the old kids and the big kids and the young kids need to come together to form a Goonies like supergroup.
Yeah, they've definitely got all the tools they need in this chest. It's just a matter of getting them all together,
right?
And getting over their own shit, like getting Lucas and Mike back together, getting Elle back with Mike and Lucas and Dustin. But I think like that's the most interesting thing is how people are wrong, leading them down paths that ultimately push them in the right direction.
Yeah.
For the wrong reasons, like Hopper, you know, like I said earlier about him thinking he's going after Will when he's actually going after Eleven and following her trail. I think that's super interesting. That feels more natural. And I think that's part of why, like, when these roadblocks come up that are obviously artificial, we can excuse it because the other things that are happening feel so natural and organic.
Yeah. Speaking of Lucas being the solo act, I fucking love his Rambo-style gearing up scene.
Yeah, that's
where
good.
He's getting all his Nam-era shit and his hammers and his utility belt, and then he puts his camo bandana tied around his head, and he's got his walkie-talkie and the compass strapped to his bike, and he's getting shit done. He's tracked this shit down to Hawkins' lab, which is the correct place. Now, what's his next move? And what's awesome is, like, if you put a gun in my head, I couldn't tell you what happens these next two episodes.
Yeah, same here.
Like, I've remembered a lot of this more than I kind of thought I would, but, like, I honestly don't know how this season resolves.
Yeah.
So that's going to be pretty entertaining.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what Lucas's next move is. Probably he's going to try and get in there.
Or I wonder if
he's really hell-bent on this.
I wonder if he's going to see, like, he's going to see that, like, oh my god, this is a pretty formidable building loaded full of adults. It's got razor wire fencing all around. Maybe I need my brothers. Maybe I need my bros.
Maybe. He might go back to the group.
Yeah, because I feel like there's going to be another missing kid if he keeps poking around there.
Yeah.
But I like that. I also liked, like, I continue to like seeing the labs moves because they send the social lady, friendly social lady worker type agent, mm-hmm. to the science teacher's house, Mr. Clark. And under the guise of being from the AV Club of Indiana, mm-hmm. she convinces him to give her the names and addresses of the boys that they're trying to hunt down. Brilliant piece of social engineering that Mr. Clark is only too happy to provide. And then it sets up because, you know, we see these government agent guys scouting out Will or John, Mike's house, and they're armed to the fucking teeth. Mm-hmm. So is Elle going to have some kind of psychokinetic shootout with these guys, or the kid's going to be taken into custody?
Yeah, it's possible. Either one.
What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen her thwart a group of guys with guns. When they raided the diner that she was at.
Right.
She took them out and escaped. So maybe she can do that again, but this time she's got people to protect with her, which has got to make it harder. I think this is a serious challenge facing them.
Yeah, and it's funny because Dr. Brenner's research just seems to be whatever the hell he wants. Like, you're investigating some way to psychically spy on Russians. Mm-hmm. Fine. Well and good. Your test subject sees a monster in another dimension, and now it's like, oh, well, we'll also establish first contact with this alien entity. Mm-hmm. And how I like how that as soon as, I mean, this seems like, you know, the hubris of man. As soon as we made first contact with it through L, the laboratory walls kind of bulge out. And I think, you know, they're implying that that's how that portal got there in the lab.
Yeah. And then L basically says, hey, I opened the door.
Yeah. So myth confirmed on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how much of what people say in this episode I should believe, because like you said, there's the stuff with Nancy and Jonathan, kind of she looks at National Geographic and figures out, hey, this might be tracking blood. Then there's this idea that what's her name, Terry, supposedly miscarried in her third trimester, and we know that that's not true because Elle is on screen. Jane, I guess, is her real name.
Yeah.
According to her mother. And also, like, there's this, I guess, secretary at the police station who tells Nancy, hey, Jonathan's in love with you. Which, like, nobody goes this crazy without being in love. And
you weren't there,
and
lady.
I didn't read that into it. Yeah, this lady's not there. She only sees the aftermath. Now, that's not why Jonathan attacked Steve.
Is Jonathan attracted to Nancy? Sure. Is Nancy maybe a little attracted to Jonathan at this point? Probably. Are they in love? No. But, I mean, like, righteous indignation can get you in the fight, too.
Sure. Shitting on my family. Like, okay, it might be love, but it's not necessarily for Nancy. It's for his family.
Right.
Like, he cares about these people.
Right.
The other thing that it has me wondering is this theory that I espoused last week, which is something Dustin outright says, Lucas is jealous of Elle and Mike, and Elle taking, I guess, Mike's time away from him, right?
Yeah,
so,
it's not that,
so
like,
do I believe that that's the case? I certainly do, because that was my theory going in, but I don't know if I'm supposed to trust that Dustin is absolutely correct.
I think he's right, because I do think that, you know, I think all of the boys are a little attracted to Elle. Because she's you know, she got a blonde wig on, and she's all dressed up. She's uh-huh. cute, and she's also powerful and dangerous. It's a classic things that are attractive. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's jealousy, not just because, you know, Lucas has had this position of best friend that's been unchallenged since they were very little boys, and now you've got this third party in there that's kind of worming in, but also, like, you know, jealousy that they're not old enough to quite name, but it's still there. Like, mm-hmm. they're 12, they're 12 going on 13. It's about that time to start, you know, having the prototypes of those types of relationships.
For sure.
So,
I mean, Dustin, he's the insightful one, right?
Dustin.
He's the guy who understands what's happening, and Dustin, he calls it out, so.
Yeah, man. I'm he's got his perception.
Yeah,
stat must be through the roof, because he's able to accurately identify all these things. And also, he's the one that, like, he's got the moral authority in the group as the lore master, that he can, like, cite their rules. Like, well, if you drew first blood, you have to handshake first. And he's also wearing a sweet Castroville Artichoke Festival shirt.
Uh-huh.
How do you celebrate the artichoke?
by eating it, I suppose.
Like there's not that much stuff you can do with artichokes. You can pickle them. You can put them in salads. Yeah. You can
make them into dip, rather.
You can like boil them and coat them in butter and do something like I think I've had something like that. There's just
pizza.
Do you? Artichoke
I've had
pizza?
Artichoke pizza, sure. All
right, that sounds pretty good, especially if it's like one of those white pizzas.
Yeah.
You know, the white cheese pizzas. I don't know if you need a whole festival for it.
If anybody can do it, California can.
Yeah.
They know what to do with the artichoke.
So I thought it's like, well, as soon because, you know, I saw this this Castroville Artichoke Festival, and I know the Hawkins, Indiana is a made-up town. I'm like, I wonder if this is just like some made-up Indiana, because Indiana's famous for actually not very many things. Indianapolis 500, basketball. Yeah. And corn.
The fairs are pretty righteous here too, though.
But they're not going to have an artichoke festival because I don't think the. But California, I'm like, oh, haha, Jacques Hughes. I see Dustin. He shouldn't have a Castroville artichoke festival. But they mentioned that he didn't move here until
fourth grade.
So I guess his backstory is he's from California.
Is this his dad's shirt?
How
fucking.
Maybe
I guess
older
my
brother. We don't know. Like we don't know.
That's true. Yeah, Dustin might have an older brother.
We don't know anything about these other kids' families.
No, nothing. We know about Mike and Will's family. That's it.
Yeah. What do you think about 11 packing away potentially 40 Eggos? And also,
it's a lot of Eggos she eats.
How did that store manager have the self-control to not shout "Lego my Eggo"? When I mean,
I was saying it in my head at the screen.
There's not very many times in life you can unironically shout that phrase.
Yeah,
he was presented one. This little girl is stealing Eggos that a store manager were under his care and protection. Those were his Eggos.
When did the Lego my Eggo slogan start?
Right here, right, like right now, like this was.
He could have been the genesis of it.
This
was
where's the beef? Yeah, this is the where's the beef era. This is. This they could have Lego my Eggo and it wouldn't have been an anachronism.
They thought it'd be too on the nose.
I don't know. I was willing it to happen and it just didn't.
Yeah. The scene that I liked even better with Elle was that one with the bullies.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't believe that knife would be sharp enough to do any damage to Dustin because
why not?
Kids just don't sharpen their knives. Like any blade, no matter how dull, is awesome to a kid and they keep it around.
It's true.
And they use it to like whittle sticks and rocks and all sorts of horrible shit. That blade is dull as a stick of butter.
It could be. I wouldn't want him to stick it in my mouth and pry teeth out of my head though.
No, that wouldn't be fun. But it's so awesome when Elle shows up.
Yeah, because she comes in there like a fucking storm front. Like, she's got her frowny face on, and she's got this filthy dress and blood shooting out of both of her nostrils, and she breaks the dude's arm. And it's like, get the fuck out. And then Dustin's like, that's right. She's our friend, and she's crazy. She'll kill you if you come back.
And you got the music swelling. Yeah. And, oh, yeah. It's great scene.
Yeah.
Great scene.
It was goofy seeing Mike dangling in air, but like...
Yeah.
That's probably what it would look like if you just started unexpectedly telekineticing somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't be like some kind of smooth, floaty Iron Man descending from his thrusters kind of thing. It would be just this kid just is all like arms and elbows and assholes writhing in midair trying to go this way and that. Another thing I didn't quite like and doesn't really even feels like it was as part of the episode is when Hopper and Joyce are interviewing Miss Ives' sister.
Yeah, let's talk about
Terry Ives. And as she talks about, oh, yeah, she had this child that she miscarried. It's supposed to be special, born with abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what abilities? And as she mentions it, they show these fast cuts of Elle, like, flinging people around and breaking their necks with their mind and harassing cats and, like, the special ability to piss off a cat. That's a little heavy-handed, right?
Yeah. I don't know why you needed the flashbacks.
Like,
there.
In this episode, we're watching Elle do crazy shit, like, splash the, you know, because there was also that really good scene where Elle's having this existential crisis about like being guilty about what she's done in a macro sense of opening this portal and causing all this grief. And...
Oh, I thought you meant of eating 40 Eggos.
Well, that couldn't have felt good either.
No.
And she's like, oh my God, I can already tell my cheeks are bloated from the egg. I got the Eggo bloat. And you know, she's looking at herself in the reflection and she tries on the blonde wig and... you know, she's just feeling all this angst, and she lashes out and screams at the lake and like disrupts the water. Why did they need to like?
They don't.
Yeah,
I'm totally with you. That was unnecessary and a little silly.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're going for like, because sometimes like I wonder some of these things are a little out of place. Are actually going for like that's what an 80s. Stephen King adaptation would do.
Yeah.
That you watch over like four Sundays over a month. Like, oh, maybe they've forgotten the L's got special powers and we can't trust our audience. But I don't know. Like part of a smart adaptation of that kind of retro material is knowing what works. What was awesome about Goonies and what was not good about Goonies. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a bad example because there's not much that wasn't awesome about the Goonies.
I do have other questions about this scene. So I initially had questions about naming 11 in the womb, but turns out I don't know that she did that because she obviously had the child.
Yeah, I think
the third trimester thing is a lie.
Yeah.
But I do have questions about how she would know about Elle's abilities. If she's been searching for Elle for 12 years, that means she was removed from Elle's presence at birth. Mm-hmm. Did Elle do something immediately out of the womb to demonstrate superpowers?
Could be. That's what I was thinking, the same thing. Or maybe Dr.
And how would she know that it was intentional from a newborn baby?
Well, they also say that she was volunteering for all this stuff, and maybe part of what she volunteered for was like... Because Elle keeps calling Dr. Brenner Papa.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just like... You know, when you got a pack of wolves or like in fucking Jurassic World where
Pratt.
Yeah. Where Chris Pratt is like, you know, inserting himself as the alpha of a velociraptor. Like, they don't really think of him but, you know, he's trying to fit in. And so Dr. Brenner conditions this girl to think of her as his father because that's just a stand-in, you know,
right.
Unquestioned authority figure. But now I'm starting to think, like, maybe it's literal, like, they're smoking dope and taking LSD together, and he's like, oh, let's have a super baby, and she'll have all these fantastic powers, and the girl and Miss Eyes or Terry's like, yeah, let's do it. And then she gets pregnant, and her maternal instinct kicks in. She's like, this is horrible. I don't want this life for my child. And Dr. Brenner just takes her. It's like, and the fact that she's a vegetable, is that Dr. Brenner's work? Is that her, like, a result of, like, this deep depression she's fallen into?
Yeah, I could totally I feel see like Joyce going down that road.
There's other explanations besides, like, a newborn baby lashing out at the... Well, like, I mean, the doctor spanks it to get it cry, and she sets him on fire with his mind.
How would she know that it worked? Like, even if there was this talk of, oh, we're going to make a super-powered baby, it's going to be awesome, let's do this thing... How would you know if it worked if she's been searching for 12 years and Elle is 12 years old?
Maybe there's a psychic connection, too. That's driven her insane. Like Elle speaks.
Well, they haven't hinted at that.
No, they did. I'm just saying. Like
these are my questions.
There's a lot of things that could. And you're right. The story. That's part of the convenience of it. Like, oh, they've got these clues on microfiche, and oh, they got the story from Benny's best friend, and this leads to this person who confirms all their theories, and yeah, it's not great.
And this woman, Terry's sister, is an unreliable. Source of information.
Yeah.
Because she's saying, hey, there was this third trimester miscarriage, which we know to be false.
Right.
So how much of what she's saying is actually true?
Yeah, and she's skeptical. Like, she thinks this is all make-believe, which is proof that the government cover-up has been effective. I also like she name-checks Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
Like, what kind of special? Have you ever read Stephen King? You know, pretty much like Carrie. It's exactly like Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I have a whole bunch more. They end on quite the cliffhanger of this van loaded full of armed people ready to take down these children.
Yeah.
What in the world is going to interrupt that?
I don't know. Elle can probably have something to say about it.
There's another moment I forgot about where Mike and Elle kind of reconcile after she saves them and she confesses to being a monster. And he's like, no, you saved me. And they hug. And then Dustin comes in with like the over everybody group hug.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. Dustin, he's hard. He's a hard guy not to like.
Dustin's the best. I've been saying it for years, or at least 1 year. Dustin's the best.
Yeah. Like I said, I think the majority of me liking Lucas Moore is just his badass arming scene. You know, his gearing up hero scene.
He gets shit done too.
It's very cool. Yeah, and he's very logical and methodical.
Yes.
And I like that. You know, that's kind of like the things about myself that I see in him. So
he calls bullshit where he sees it too.
Yeah, I'm not a very good peacemaker. Like Dustin's the ultimate peacemaker, and I'm not so good at that.
The one other thing I wanted to talk about is, I guess, a little more about L's powers, and I guess the Demogorgon too. Like, so I asked, you know, could the Demogorgon open a portal anywhere? L obviously opened the gate initially, so maybe she has that power, but could she shut the portal?
Well,
would she be able to do that?
I'm going to push back. Did she actually open it, or did the Demogorgon become aware of the hunting ground on the other side and opened it itself?
I mean, all I can do is go based on what she said.
But she might have been perfect. She doesn't understand.
Sure.
Clearly, this is an intuitive thing that she does with her power. She couldn't explain, like, oh, well, I'm inverting the quantum flow of the baryon particles. And she's just kind of, like, doing this shit. So I don't know that she knows.
Maybe not.
But you're right, like, did 11 open up that portal in the tree? She couldn't have, could she?
I don't know. I don't know why she
would. And what about the portal that was in Joyce's house?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe there's.
I mean, she might have kicked open a door which is gigantic, and the Demogorgon can go in and out of whichever part of that door he chooses, which basically gives him access to all of Hawkins.
Right. She's weakened the barrier between the two worlds, and now they can poke through.
That's what it seems like based on the evidence. I'm just wondering if there's a way to shut this thing. And if so, does L have the power, or is it going to be some scientific, solution to the problem?
It's going to involve a 2-gallon can of gasoline and
a couple
lots
of bear traps.
Of magnets, and that will shut her down. They're going to set these magnets on fire, and using insane clown posse logic, it's going to shut the gate. Shut that gate right down.
Yeah, you just have to destroy all the magnets in the world, and the gate will shut.
Easy.
Including the core of the
Earth. Including the core of the... Yeah, you have to stop the core of the Earth rotating.
Yep.
And then we'll all die of space cancer because of the cosmic rays.
That's all I've got.
Yeah, see how they get out of this predicament, this jam. Thanks for listening to our Season 1 coverage of Stranger Things. If you like what you hear and want more, check out all of our television, movie, and pop culture content on baldmove.com. If you'd like to help support our podcast and get a ton of bonus content and features, check out club.baldmove.com. We'll also be taking feedback during our upcoming Season 1 wrap-up podcast, so send that in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. You can also discuss this with your fellow fans at forums.baldmove.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.